read-along audiobooks, the best of the classics. Sleeping Beauty by Charles Perrault. The Sleeping Beauty in the Forest. Once upon a time, there lived a king and queen who were very unhappy because they had no children. More unhappy than words can tell. Vows, pilgrimages, they tried everything, but nothing worked. However, after many years of trying, a little daughter was born to them. The baptism was splendid. All the fairies they could find in the country, 7 in total, were chosen as godmothers, so each could give her a gift, according to the custom of the fairies in those days. This way, the princess would receive all imaginable perfections. When the ceremony was over, everyone returned to the king's palace, where a great banquet had been prepared for the fairies. The table was magnificently laid for them. Each received a massive gold case containing a spoon, a fork, and a knife of fine gold, set with diamonds and rubies. Just as everyone was sitting down, an old fairy entered. This fairy had not been invited because they thought she was either dead or enchanted. No one had seen her outside the tower in which she lived for more than 50 years. The king ordered that a place be set for her at the table. But it was impossible to give her one of the massive gold cases. Only 7 had been made, one for each of the 7 fairies invited. The old fairy thought she was treated with contempt and muttered some threats between her teeth. One of the young fairies, who was near her, overheard her grumblings and was afraid she might bestow some evil gift on the young princess. Accordingly, as soon as they rose from the table, she went and hid herself behind the hangings in order to be the last to speak. She wanted to be able to repair, as much as possible, any harm the old fairy might do. Meanwhile, the fairies began bestowing their gifts on the princess. The youngest, as her gift, promised that she would be the most beautiful person in the world. The next fairy, that she would have the mind of an angel. The third, that every movement of hers would be full of grace. The fourth, that she would dance to perfection. The fifth, that she would sing like a nightingale. The sixth, that she would play on every kind of instrument in the most exquisite manner possible. It was now the turn of the old fairy. Her head shaken, more with malice than with age, she said that one day the princess would pierce her hand with a spindle and die of the wound. The whole company trembled when they heard this terrible prediction. There was not one among them who did not shed tears. At this moment, the young fairy advanced from behind the tapestry and said, speaking that all might hear, "Comfort yourself, king and queen. Your daughter will not die of the wound. I do not have sufficient power to undo entirely what my elder has done. But when the princess pierces her hand with a spindle, she will not die, only fall into a deep sleep that will last 100 years. At the end of this time, a king's son will come and wake her." The king, hoping to prevent the misfortune foretold by the old fairy, immediately prohibited everyone, on pain of death, either to spin with a spindle or to have spindles in their possession. 15 or 16 years later, the king and queen were busy when the princess decided to explore. While running about, up the stairs from one room to the other, she came to a little room at the top of a tower. There, an old woman sat alone spinning with a distaff and spindle. This woman had never heard the king's proclamation forbidding the use of the spindle. "What are you doing there?" asked the princess. I am spinning my pretty child, answered the old woman. Oh, how pretty it is, exclaimed the princess. How do you do it? Give it to me. I want to see if I can do it as well. She reached for the spindle hastily and thoughtlessly. As the old fairy had ordained, no sooner had she taken hold of the spindle than she pierced her hand with the point of it and fainted away. The poor old woman called for help in great distress. People came running from all quarters. They threw water in the princess' face. They unlaced her dress, they slapped her hands, and they rubbed her temples, but nothing would awaken her. The king, remembering the prediction of the fairies, ran upstairs at the noise. He understood that this accident must have happened as the fairies had said it would. He ordered the princess to be carried into a beautiful room of the palace and laid on a bed embroidered with silver and gold. You might have thought it was an angel lying there, so lovely did she look, for the rich colors of her complexion had not faded in her swoon. Her cheeks were still rosy, and her lips like coral, only her eyes were closed, but they could hear her breathing softly, which showed that she was not dead. The king ordered that she be left to sleep there in peace until the hour of her waking arrived. The good fairy, who had saved her life by condemning her to sleep for 100 years, was in the kingdom of Matakin, 12,000 leagues away. When the princess met with her accident, the fairy was informed instantly by a little dwarf, who had a pair of 7-league boots, boots which enabled the wearer to travel 7 leagues for every stride. The fairy set out immediately. An hour afterwards, she was seen arriving in a chariot of fire, drawn by dragons. The king advanced to help her out of the chariot. She approved of all he had done, but gifted with great foresight, she thought that the princess would feel very lost and bewildered on awakening and finding herself all alone in the old castle. So with her wand, the fairy touched everybody who was in the castle, except the king and queen. Governesses, maids of honor, chambermaids, gentlemen, officers, stewards, cooks, scullions, boys, guards, porters, pages, and footmen. She also touched the horses that were in the stables with their grooms, the great mastiffs in the courtyard, and little Fluff, the pet dog of the princess that was on the bed beside her. As soon as she had touched them, they all fell asleep, not to wake again until the hour arrived for the princess to do so. Now they would all be ready to attend upon her as soon as she needed them. Even the spits before the fire, hung with partridges and pheasants, and the very fire itself, went to sleep. All this was done in a moment, for fairies never lost much time over their work. The king and queen now kissed their dear daughter, who kept on sleeping, left the castle, and issued a proclamation forbidding any person, whosoever, to approach it. These orders were unnecessary. In a quarter of an hour, so many trees, large and small, brambles and thorns interlacing each other, grew up around the park that neither man nor beast could have got through them. Nothing could now be seen of the castle but the tops of the turrets, and then only from far away. Nobody doubted that this was also the fairy's handiwork, to protect the princess from the curiosity of strangers during her long slumber. 100 years passed. One day, the son of the king, who now sat upon the throne, and who was of a different family to that of the sleeping princess, was hunting in the neighborhood. He asked about the towers he could see above the trees of a very thick forest. Each person answered him according to the story they had heard, Some said it was an old castle haunted by ghosts. Others that all the witches of the country held their midnight revelries there. The more general opinion, however, was that it was the abode of an ogre, and that he carried there all the children he could catch, to eat them at his leisure without being pursued. The ogre alone had the power of making his way through the forest. The prince did not know what to believe of all this. Then an old peasant said to him, "Prince, it has been more than 50 years, but I heard my father say that inside the castle was the most beautiful princess ever seen. That she went to sleep for 100 years and would be awakened by a king's son for whom she was intended and waiting." At these words, the young prince felt himself all on fire. He did not doubt for a moment that he was the one chosen to accomplish this famous adventure. Urged to the deed by love and glory, he set forward without delay. He was just approaching the forest when all the great trees, all the brambles and thorns, made way for him to pass of their own accord. He walked toward the castle, which he saw at the end of the long avenue he had entered, and was somewhat surprised to find that none of his people had been able to follow him. The trees had closed up again as soon as he had passed. Nevertheless, he continued to advance. A young prince inspired by love is always courageous. He came to a large court where everything he saw might well have frozen his blood with terror. A frightful silence reigned around. Death seemed to be everywhere. On every side, nothing could be seen but the bodies of men and animals stretched out, apparently lifeless. He soon discovered, however, by the shining noses and red faces of the porters, that they were only asleep. Their goblets, which still had a few drops of wine, proved they had dozed off whilst drinking. He next passed through a large courtyard paved with marble, ascended the staircase, and entered the guard room. The guards stood, drawn up in line with their carbines shouldered, snoring loudly. He passed through several rooms with ladies and gentlemen all asleep, some standing, others seated. At last, he came to a room covered with gold. There, on a bed, curtains open on either side, he saw the most lovely sight he had ever looked upon. A princess, who appeared to be about 15 or 16, and whose dazzling beauty shone with a radiance which scarcely seemed to belong to this world. He approached, trembling and admiring, and knelt down beside her. At that moment, the enchantment ended. The princess awoke and gazed at him for the first time with unexpected tenderness. "Is it you, prince?" she said. "I have waited long for you to come." The prince was delighted at these words, and still more by the tone in which they were uttered. He knew not how to express his joy and gratitude. He assured her that he loved her better than himself. His words were rather confused, but she was all the more pleased with them. There was little eloquence, but a great deal of love. He was much more embarrassed than she was, which is not to be wondered at. She had had time to think over what she would say to him. For there is reason to believe, although history does not mention it, that during her long, long sleep, the good fairy let her enjoy very pleasant dreams. In short, they talked for 4 hours and did not get through half of what they had to say to each other. In the meantime, all the palace had been roused at the same time as the princess. Everybody remembered his or her duty, and, since they were not in love, they were dying with hunger. The lady-in-waiting, as hungry as any of them, became impatient and announced loudly to the princess that the meat was on the table. The prince assisted the princess to rise. She was fully dressed and most magnificently. But he was careful not to tell her that she was dressed like his grandmother and wore a stand-up collar, for in spite of this, she was not a bit less beautiful. They passed into a hall of mirrors, where they supped, waited upon by the officers of the princess. The violins and hautboys played old but charming pieces of music, even though it was 100 years since they had been performed by anybody. After supper, without wasting any time, the grand almoner married the royal couple in the chapel of the castle. This is the end of part one of the Sleeping Beauty tale. The story of what happens to the Sleeping Beauty after getting married continues in part two of the tale.